Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. It is 9:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is the 25th of July 2013. You are tuned to Asia Stream on Radio Sai, and we are coming to you live from the Radio Sai studios in Prashanthi Nilayam, India. Current weather conditions in the abode of Supreme Peace are pleasant, with seasonal monsoon tracking normally. Minimum temperature 24, maximum 31 degrees Celsius. General outlook for the day, a mix of sun and cloud, more cloudy than sunny though. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, your all-day live connection to Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna, and I'd like to begin by offering myself at the lotus feet of the Lord of the Universe, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Apart from being my personal hero, Bhagwan Baba is also the voice, the ears, the heart, and the soul of Radio Sai. On the audio console is my colleague, sound engineer Brother Sunil. On behalf of the entire Radio Sai team here, that includes those of us you often hear and others who work diligently behind the scenes, please accept our loving Guru Purnima greetings. Now here's what's making news in your true home, that is Prashanthi Nilayam. Although Guru Purnima happened to be on Monday, July the 22nd, we began the grand celebrations on July 18th itself, and they are continuing even now. Prashanthi Nilayam is always in a celebratory mood, and we celebrate a busy multi-faith calendar here all year round. This past week in Prashanthi, the events have actually left the devotees' cup of joy overflowing and their souls overwhelmed. The talent, the devotion, the deep and sincere commitment of this organization and its members, both across India and from places as far as Bali, Indonesia, Mexico, USA, is just too huge to grasp. After the Mahasamadhi, the movement seems to have grown so huge that it's nearly impossible to capture it on any one single canvas. We have been enjoying top-class musical and dance presentations and listening to inspiring and informative talks by speakers whose words are rooted in their spiritual conviction. What they spoke touched the audience very deeply. Just learning about the vastness and depth of this mission that the Avatar has initiated is simply mind-boggling. What I find so strange is the fact that on the one hand, we feel that we know that the Sai movement is robust and vibrant across India and in another 126 countries around the globe, but that is our knowing in the head. But then when we see the presentations and the reports and that talk about his grandeur, we are simply left speechless. Let me recall day before yesterday, that was on July the 22nd. It was a sight to behold the Mexican devotees sitting in front of the Mahasamadhi. They were dressed so beautifully to begin with. The ladies in white saris with an unusual headgear in deep pink. It was like a braided band across their head with a bouquet of flowers on the side of their temple and a twisted fuchsia shawl across their shoulders. And when they began to sing their ode of love to the love of their lives, Senor Bhagwan Sai Baba, Senor Ganesha, they simultaneously screened the highlights of the Mexican Sai movement on the big screens located in the Sai Kulwant Hall. To tell you the truth, dear listeners, our hearts were aching with joy. It was a happy pain because one could not contain the adoration for the dazzling spread of seva activities that the Mexican devotees screened before us. How much goodness and how much good work has Baba inspired around the world? Continuing with the festive spirit of Guru Purnima, just yesterday in the evening, the Sai Kulwant Hall reverberated to the voices of unity. It was the turn of the Glendale Arcadia Sadhana Group and the Glendale Balvikas of Southern California, who presented a medley of songs and prayers. Devotional songs from major religions of the world, Hinduism, Judaism, Zoroastrianism, Buddhism, Christianity and Islam, were rendered. Who else but God incarnate could inspire such selfless love and altruism and this sort of broad-mindedness in so many? Now, speaking of selflessness, our Sri Sathya Sai Seva Organization of India and the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust are currently very busy working away on the relief and rehabilitation work in the flood-ravaged Uttarakhand in North India. Every aspect of the ongoing work is being executed with that SSS signature, that loving excellence and meticulous attention to detail that Bhagwan has taught us. Now, as we discussed on Morning Glory, it is our intention to understand the phenomena of natural disasters from economic, demographic, geological, physical, emotional, and spiritual perspectives. Usually what happens is that a disaster strikes and we see these very sad pictures in the media and we feel so touched for a few seconds or maybe minutes for the victims. In the recent Uttarakhand disaster, the world saw how unsuspecting people were swept off by the raging waters before they could run fast enough to climb a hill. And cameras caught it as it was happening, and the world watched many drown as it happened due to the live feed from high-powered cameras from various networks. So after feeling really sad, most of us at best may write out a check for the relief work and then get on with our lives, hoping we'll never be in such a situation. These things always happen to someone else. Now, what if someone turned around and pointed a finger at you and me for the disaster in Uttarakhand, arguing that each of us has collectively contributed to this calamity? What if experts who study natural phenomena from economic and spiritual perspective point that the recent spate of natural calamities are a strong wake-up call which, if we continue to ignore, will eventually lead to our annihilation as a race? Last week, I brought you a live studio conversation with Professor Anant Raman on the strains on Mother Earth, which incidentally is the only planet known to support life. Dear listeners, today I'm very pleased to bring you a conversation with two more experts from the Sai University. Last week, I invited Professor R. Gangadhar Shastri, Joint Director, Prashanthi Nilayam Campus, and Professor of Political Science there, along with Dr. Deepak Anand, Assistant Professor, Department of Management Studies, Prashanthi Nilayam Campus, to decipher for our listeners all this disturbing news from a spiritual and economic perspective. The two experts are well-versed in the ancient scriptures on the topic of nature and humanity's relationship with it. I had to pre-record this intensely interesting conversation with both of them, as coming for a live studio conversation would conflict with their teaching schedule at Baba's University. Today, I will bring you part one of this discussion where the learner scholars discuss the current multiple organ failure that our planet is facing. Our Mother Earth is a living, breathing and pulsating with life entity. She gives and she gives and sustains and she nurtures us. In return, we as a collective whole have abused and violated her sanctity without a care. She's now beginning to react, resound and reflect back at us what we are putting into this relationship with her. Dear listeners, you must hear Professor Gangadhar Shastri and Dr. Deepak Anand decode the message of the divine on this issue. Let's learn from the learned professors of Bhagwan's University what message nature is giving us through such violent retaliation in the form of natural calamities. Sairam Gangadhar Shastri, sir, and Sairam Dr. Deepak Anand, welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam.
Sir, Professor Gangadhar Shastri, let's start with you. This topic of natural disasters, it goes back to our understanding of nature. Now, let's just go back to ancient times. What is the importance of nature as revealed through our scriptures and our epics?
Sairam to everybody. From the very beginning of, civilization, mm-hmm. since times immemorial, it is Bharat, that's India, which has given the knowledge of nature to the entire world. And more importance is given to nature because nature is worshipped as Vishwaswarupa, Vishwaswarupa is actually the entire universe. We don't talk about one planet here or one continent here. Vishwa is something about which Bhagavan Baba talked on a number of occasions, and Swami said that your own scientists are learning nowadays to realize that this is not the only galaxy. There are millions of galaxies like this outside, and all these galaxies put together, which is not possible for any one of us to visualize
even in our mind.
Mm-hmm. That is what is called as Vishwaswarupa.
Okay.
And this Vishwa is totally interconnected. Because they say that the soul of the entire universe is related to every individual soul.
That's so deep. This is a vast universe. So are you telling me all the galaxies, everything is interconnected and so am I to them?
Totally. That is the reason how actually in ancient times, let us say about the sages and seers and saints in India who were sitting in one place and were able to connect themselves to the entire universe and described the mysteries of the universe in their writings. Talk about Vedas, we do not know actually the origin of the Vedas even till today. Apaurusheyas just emanated like that. Where from? How did actually all this wisdom emerge? We don't know. In the same way, when we talk about the nature, there is a wonderful balance maintained, created by whomsoever we call as the Vishwavirat Swarupa. That Vishwavirat Swarupa is the one which is responsible for creating this balance between various species. Sometimes we think that there are some species which are dangerous to us, but it is revealed through our scientific investigations in modern times that they help us in maintaining balance in the ecosystem.
Yes.
We know it. And maybe you think that you are scared of some wild creatures, but there are any number of people in this world who live with wild creatures and they consider themselves as members of their family. Because we are not able to do it, we should not think that it doesn't exist.
A typical, fantastic example comes to mind is that monastery in Thailand where the Thai Buddhist monks have these wild cats, I think tigers, roaming around like pets.
Yes.
And because of that love energy, they are so peaceful and non-violent.
Yeah. Not only that, if we are familiar with our scriptures and the lives of our seers and sages like Vishwamitra, Vasistha, Kashyapa and others who maintained ashramas in the old ancient times, all the creatures were living in peace with each other
in harmony.
And as recently as they say that in the ashram of, say, for example, Ramana Maharshi, the creatures which are naturally not poised to live together, who are considered to be enemies, they were maintaining friendly postures towards each other. This was happening. And Adi Shankaracharya is believed to have started an ashram where actually a snake was holding its hood to a frog just to protect it from the sunshine. All these things happen in the
unbelievable.
Yeah, these things happen, and in the ashrams, in the ashrama of say Valmiki or Vasistha, all the animals were living together. And it is said that when Vishwamitra was about to leave his ashram and was walking towards Himalayas for penance, in fact, the animals followed him to a long distance. All the animals followed, and there was a time when Vishwamitra turned back and talked to them and told them he was not going to come back soon and it was good for them to go back and live in the ashram. So all the animals retreated. They went back to the ashram and lived there in the ashram. And questions are asked in modern times in what language Vishwamitra spoke. Bhagavan Baba said always there is a language called the language of the heart. Because we don't understand the language of the heart, we should not say that it is not there. We can speak. We have our hearts in place. So this is the thing which we should really capture. This is the most important message from nature.
So what I'm hearing is that nature is extremely intelligent and sensitive, and this is a fact that was recognized in the most ancient scriptures such as the Vedas. Now, if India is hyped to be such a spiritually advanced civilization. What's going on now, Dr. Deepak Anand, your thoughts?
Thank you very much, Sister Karuna. I think I'll first of all take it one string further to what Gangadhar Shastri Garu has just told us,
right,
about the morals that live in our hearts.
Yes.
And what was drawing all these animals, who we say are, you know, at a lower species, even towards a great sage and following him in obedience, was that this particular morals and values which live in our heart are most powerful, and they connect with every being in the world, animate, inanimate. That is why I firmly believe, as Shastri Garu also said, that Vedas are the primary source of not only moral enhancement for the economic man, but also it tells a path for the misguided ecology to achieve a true sustainability. If we really have to sustain us in the long run, we have to trust what the Vedas say. When they say, the Vedas say, it is our Nadi Mata, it is our Bhu Mata, it is our Go Mata, it has meaning in that. Basically, the Vedas will tell us that Mata Eva Putran Rakshasva, basically meaning in Rig Veda, it says that we should protect Mother Nature as our own mother itself. It's one of our mothers.
One of the five mothers.
Five mothers that we have. Mm. So how do we really treat our mother? With great reverence.
And respect and love.
And protect her in times of her need. When she is not well, we go all out and sacrifice even our lives to save our mother. But today we are, you know, treating our own mother.
Violating her, if I may say so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I fully agree with you. In fact, in, you know, in Kautilya's Arthashastras, in the other scriptures, we always talk about the concept of Mangalya. That what does a mother give you in return? She gives you her blessings. That you have Mangalya, that you have got auspiciousness in your life. And when we have this particular concept ingrained deep into our hearts, then all these, the five mothers, you know, let me just list them out. The Veda Mata, which is the Vedas, the Upanishads, all the ancient scriptures, who are like a mother who guide us towards the right direction of our life, telling us the purpose of our life. Then we have the Bhumata, which is the Mother Earth, which sustains all of us. Then we have the Deshamata, which is our country, which gives us sustenance, brings us up, gives us all the protection. And then we have also the Dehamata, which is our actual mother. So all these mothers give us that kind of a protection and sustenance, and our duty as sons and daughters of this particular, all the mothers, is to give them protection in return. So basically what I feel is that the external crisis that we are today witnessing in the environment is a crisis of the internal lack of this unity with our own mothers, with our own roots, with our own culture.
Mm-hmm. So just an external manifestation of a much deeper problem at a deep spiritual level. Now, we are analyzing this problem from a deep spiritual perspective. Professor Shastri, what would you say about if someone argued that India as a spiritual engine of the world is overly hyped when you see the current situation here?
There is no question of overhyping or anything like that. India is actually the spiritual mother of the world, because still the Vedas, Upanishads and the other scriptures are very much vibrant in India. We go on performing lot of yajnas and yagas. And yajnas and yagas are performed to propitiate the goodwill, blessings of the sacred souls, or you can say the angels, the supernatural powers which conduct the entire universe. See, in our country we have the knowledge of everything in minute detail that is happening in the entire universe. Whatever is happening in the entire universe is described precisely to the benefit of the human person on the planet. If you want to live in peace, what is it that is supposed to be done by you is clearly given to us by the Vedas and Upanishads and everything. What you need to do is very simple, as repeatedly told by Bhagavan Baba, say good, do good, think good. Always think of the welfare of others before you think of your own welfare. Today the problem is everybody is becoming self-centered, and everybody wants to gain everything for himself, even at the cost of his own family. Selfishness is the root cause of all problems in the world, And the second problem, as pointed out by Swami, is jealousy. Swami described jealousy as worse than cancer. And what happens, you know, your bad thoughts are going to destroy the nature. As I understand it, because it is revealed through Ramayana, the process of committing an evil begins with the emanation of the thought itself in your mind. If you get a bad thought, that is going to destroy the nature, because it pollutes the entire environment. That is the reason in Prashanta Nilayam, what we do is, we start early morning with Omkaram, Suprabhatam, Bhajans. From morning till evening, all the time we are involved in one kind of spiritual activity or the other.
And with the chanting.
Everything goes on. Even I tell you, a small thing like a sevadar person serving meal in the canteen saying Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, is going to have wonderful vibrations in the entire air. See, the body is given to you, this body. How do you know why you got this body, first of all? Is there anybody who can answer the question, why you got this body? Who are you?
Theoretically, I'm guessing I'm God who's here to have a human experience through this body.
Well, how many people think like that?
And internalize it too, because I'm just saying it theoretically, but to remember it at all times is definitely a challenge.
But where is the time for people to think of God in modern times? Who thinks? Who
so wants busy, to? Rushing around, making
Baba,
a living.
Bhagavan Baba went to the extent of saying that nobody wants to do namaskar to the other person. Bringing both his palms together, he doesn't even want to do namaskar to anybody else. He thinks it below his dignity to do that. Without understanding that, when you are doing namaskar to somebody, you are doing namaskar to yourself, because you see God in the other person. The whole perception of life has to change. We have to go back to our ancient times when life was visualized as a part of the entire natural scheme. In the natural scheme, you are given an opportunity to spend the time that is allotted to you to work for the welfare of the entire universe without disturbing anything in this universe. That means you have a pure mind and a pure heart, and you are just living, enjoying your everything to be done like that. That's why in our Vedas we say, Sahana bhavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryam karvavahai, tejisvinavadhi tamasumavidvishavahai. Every prayer, you just
do it for a greater good of the largest number, mutual benefit, not only exclusively for yourself.
There is nothing like larger number.
Largest, everybody, all like inclusive.
Everything is included. Every minute thing on the planet existing here is connected to the entire universe, and you have to work for the welfare of everything in the entire universe. That is the reason.
How do you develop such sensitivity to know that whatever I think is going to react, resound, and come back to me? How do you get there? Most people think they live in silos, and you know, when we hear of these catastrophes, we think they happen to somebody else. Thank God I live in a safe place and it's all okay here. I live in a modern country where there's good disaster management. How do we get that, develop the sensitivity to know that the pain of a person in Uttarakhand is also my pain? Is Dr. Anand?
I think I would like to give one small example here.
Sure.
Which was shared by Mr. G. Venkatraman with us, one of the moral classes. He came and then he was talking to us about, Swami always says, the proper study of mankind is man. So he shared his experience as to when he asked Swami the real meaning of this particular phrase that Swami has used often in his discourses. Swami said, asked him one particular question. He was looking for an answer, but Swami answered by means of a question. And he asked him, if you are going on a path barefooted, and if a thorn pricks your feet, what will you do? Swami, I will remove it. And then Swami counter questioned, how will you remove it? He said, Swami, with my hand. And then Swami again asked him, why would the hand go and help the feet? And he said, Swami, because it also feels the pain of the feet. The eyes also shed tears because it feels the pain of the feet. And then Swami said, this is the meaning of the proper study of mankind is man. That the whole society is like also a human being's body. When one part of society is infected,
one limb is hurt,
one part of society is suffering, other parts should not feel that, you know, that we are different from this particular part. We are all one. Swami always wants to take us from the level of the Vyakti to Samashti to Prakati and then to Parmeshti, So every, it's all included. As Shastri sir was telling, it is not different from each other.
So man, society.
Man, society, nature.
Nature and then
and God. And look at this, in the continuum, the nature comes just next to God.
Hmm.
And Swami says, we should not treat Mother Nature as an inanimate thing, but she is alive and it is a reflection of God. And we have to protect. In one of the man management discourses, when you see Swami come and address the MBA boys in the college, we are fortunate enough to listen to some of those discourses. And in one discourse, Swami took up the issue of pollution of the natural environment. And then pointing a finger at the boys, very sternly, Swami said, boys, if you go out and think that you can pollute the environment and that this Sai Baba will forgive you, it is not true. Your punishment is many times fold because you are devotees of Bhagwan, you are students of Bhagwan. And if knowingly you make a mistake of even working in organizations who pollute the environment, there is no forgiveness for you. So
wow.
How careful we have to be.
Wow, that's a huge responsibility.
Huge responsibility on all of us.
Hmm.
Actually, when you look at it today, because of our greed, unbelievable greed, what is happening is, I don't know whether people understand or not. It is necessary for us to understand by the grace of Bhagavan Baba, we are given this knowledge. What we are doing today is, we are killing our villages, we are killing our towns, we are killing our cities, we are killing our rivers, we are killing our mountains, our plants, our trees, our birds, our beasts, everything.
In the name of development.
I don't know whether we are getting the message or not. When you talk about extensive usage of cell phones, in recent papers they say, sparrows are going to get extinguished. Mm. Such a beautiful bird, which is very, very important for all of us because it helps us a lot in living a good life. I'm giving you only one example of a sparrow. But many species are getting extinguished from the planet and thereby the ecological balance is going to be destroyed. Mm. And man, whether he knows or not, he is getting onto a path of something like suicide in the name of development.
So it's like a collective suicide pact we have and we are walking into this trap without paying any attention.
That is because of greed.
How did we ignore these danger signals for so long?
No, this is because of the capitalism and the capitalist way of thinking and man becoming more and more selfish and forgetting God, nature, all the concepts we are forgetting. You just look at it. India is one country in the world. I firmly believe in this. And I want everybody also to know this. Since times immemorial in India, show me something which is not worshipped on this planet.
I know we worship the trees, we worship animals, we worship stones, we worship idols. And however amusing it might be to some other people from other cultures, in this country we even worship an anthill.
Not
yes.
only that, we worship a snake.
We worship snakes.
Naga Panchami.
Exactly, and
Naga Panchami, and we seek the blessings of snakes.
Yes.
We worship sun god.
Of course.
Because, you know, sun god, I don't know whether they realize it, whether they understand it or not, they know it. Without sun, it is not possible for anything to exist on the planet.
The Greeks worship the sun and as well.
He is the one who is the source of sustenance of everything.
Yes.
All that is to be eliminated from the face of the earth evaporates because of the heat emanated, given. You have all foliage, food, everything because of him. The water actually evaporates and comes back in the form of rain. And we are doing it since ages. We worship sun,
and
moon,
we have
all the planets.
Beautiful prayers and hymns glorifying sun god.
Mountains we worship. In Balakrishna Leelas, we say Krishna, Bhagavan, all the Gopikas and Gopabalas going on worshipping. Cows are worshipped. Because without cows, where are we? Show me something which is not... Every blade of grass is worshipped.
Absolutely.
And a Raja, when he was going for a war, even for going for a war when he was going, first of all, he used to bow down to the chariot before getting into the chariot. And then he prays to the horses to take him safely. You have to pray to the charioteer also, because it is in his hands actually the chariot is all there. So if you are able to just open up your mind and see, your well-being is in the hands of everything around you. And if you are going to destroy everything around you, where is your well-being?
You cannot live as an island and be happy in your expensive condominium or beautiful house when everything outside your gate is a mess.
That's what is actually we are doing today.
Hmm.
And Bhagavan Baba once said, in the name of exploiting the mineral resources and all that, what you are doing is, you are getting into the boils of Mother Earth and destroying her boils.
Mm-hmm.
This will ultimately cause, without your knowledge, terrible earthquakes.
And it's coming to happen.
It's happening, absolutely.
We are seeing that happen.
In fact, in 1970 itself, you know, I was reading a particular article whereby, you know, Gaylord Nelson, a former senator in the USA Senate, let me just quote you, and he says, let us all remember that the economy is a fully owned subsidiary of the environment and not the other way around. All economic activity is dependent upon the natural environment. And if you destroy the environment, you cannot, you know, have any GDP, any GNP or any other major economic development, because it is totally dependent upon that. And also, some authors also believe that the way the humanity has destroyed the natural environment, it has set into process, a particular process, that even if on this particular day, you know, a miracle happens and everybody stops using fossil fuels, everybody stops, you know, becomes environmentally conscious, starts contributing towards it with full heart and soul, even then, 90% chances are that humanity cannot survive 21st century. This is sincere research by great scholars and mathematicians. Because it's into a particular process. And that is why we have, but doesn't mean that everything is lost. We have our Bhagwan with us. We have the Paramechti with us, the Godhead with us, whose reflection is Prakriti, and his hands are all the powers. So if you sincerely pray, everything can be changed. And it has happened so many times in the past. Say, for example, when Bhagwan Baba, you know, declared he would never leave the shores of the Indian subcontinent and ever go abroad, but then he went to East Africa. And then when somebody asked Swami, you had promised you will never go, he said it was the devotion of that devotee.
Dr. Patel.
Yes. And he said, I had promised to him that I will come to his house and have parting meals in his house. But by the time I could fulfill the promise, he has already gone to East Africa to fulfill that true devotee's prayer. I changed all the rules. In Hindi, we always have a particular saying, Param prema ke pale padkar Prabhu ko niyam badalte dekha. That in getting entangled in the great devotion of the devotee, we have seen the God change the rules of creation himself. Apna maan bhale tal jaye. His honor may go for a toss, it doesn't bother. But he, par bhakt ka maan nahi talte dekha. He has never let the word or the true prayer of a devotee go false.
Wow,
we still have hope. All the research may say humanity cannot survive. We become like dinosaurs, you know, in 22nd century. But then we have hope because we have a great God with us who has all the powers of the whole universe in his hands.
That's reassuring to know, and you know, we all want to hold on to our faith and know that because we have known Swami and God has been on earth and he has given us very good teachings which we follow, anything can be averted. His presence is not going to go in vain, you know, incarnating as an avatar. Having said that, all we are seeing of late is calamity after calamity, disaster after disaster, man-made, even the so-called natural disasters, if we probe deeply, as both of you are suggesting, they go down to a cause by human being. They've been caused by human beings collectively abusing and misusing Mother Nature. Where does the solution lie, in your opinion, for the larger humanity? It's at many levels. It cannot be simplistic, I understand. Starting from the spiritual, going down to corporate and economic, where do you see the solutions?
The solution is given by Swami himself. Today the problem is limitless desires. That is the only thing. We are running after so many things in the world. We want the whole world for ourselves. We want everything that is on the planet for ourselves. In the process, we don't mind going to any extent in destroying everything, whatever comes in our way. So the endless desires are responsible for us to have put ourselves in such a very bad situation today. we go places, we spoil places, we go to the Himalayas, for example. Our people go there and even destroy the ecosystem in the Himalayas.
And people who climb Mount Everest, they leave tons and tons of garbage on the mountain. They go to Mansarovar and it's littered with plastic bags. And if you go to, for example, the Nilgiris, the tourist spots in Tamil Nadu, in South India, every little mountain has been cut into a little motel.
Yes.
Trees have been destroyed. Same with parts of Himachal Pradesh, Uttarakhand, where there was so much of lopsided development without any ecological considerations.
The recent calamity in Uttarakhand is actually said to be because of this. What they did was they went on eliminating the forests over there. And the rainwater that is flowing, the speed at which it flows down is cut down because of the forests. And now the forests are eliminated because we want to make money in the name of tourism. So what happens is you are playing with the nature, and the nature is going to bounce back and with reinforced power, and it will settle scores with you. That's what is happening. We are trying to harness all sorts of things, energy. We want more and more and more energy. We are not satisfied with what we have. And if you look at, say, for example, Prashant Nilayam, the ashram, the spiritual center established by Bhagavan Baba. In the ashram, if you look at it, you have lots and lots of people who are highly educated in all respects, who are well-versed in various walks of life and all that, living a simple life. You find them leading a normal, simple life, living in small accommodations. Whereas people outside run for huge buildings, huge facilities. But are we questioning ourselves whether it is necessary at all? In ancient India, how people were living?
Well, the carbon footprint size has really changed now over the centuries. Modern man's carbon footprint is huge compared to the Vedic man's. But it seems to be like a cycle we are caught up in, trying to keep up with the Joneses, you know, trying to match other people. The advertising industry, the consumerism, everything is fueling our desires. Somewhere there has to be a spiritual solution to this.
In case people are ready to take to the path of spirituality at all, when I was a student, when I was going through my school, there was definitely something in the name of moral classes and in all the lessons, every lesson that is taught to me, I was given some values relating to life. How I am supposed to live and live for the society. Even today, if you look at, Swami was quoting that wonderful thing in the super speciality hospital. When you enter the hospital, in the central dome, you have Mahaganesha statue. It is written there, Paropakarardham idam shariram. This body is to be utilized, maybe, if I can change it. This body is to be destroyed in the service of the society.
That's the purpose of the body.
That is the purpose of the body. The body is given to you not to...
For self-indulgence, or sensual pleasure.
For nothing.
Just to serve.
Why, you know, we will be able to realize this purpose when once the fact sinks into our mind that we are going to vacate this planet one day or other.
We seem to forget everything about our mortality. We think we are here forever. You know what's the saddest part? For example, in India, when we exploit natural resources or mine them, we mine them without regard for regulation, and every other day we hear another scandal, scam that has happened. And people who are involved in the scam, most of the time after making a few headlines and getting maybe they lose their ministership, then they get away with it. In the meanwhile, millions of tons of coal or other
natural resources
are mined from Mother Earth, are lost without any ecological concern at all.
That means what is happening is the purpose
becoming so insensitive.
Yeah, because the purpose of education, the road that education is supposed to take is lost. Probably the worst hit department in the entire country ever since independence is education. We are not imparting right education. That is the reason Bhagavan Baba started a university. And the university's central focal point, according to Bhagavan Baba, is to produce good individuals, good human beings, not great individuals.
And not greedy human beings. But then what do you say to doctors and engineers who are so driven to get these degrees and they go to these private colleges where their families have to pay huge amounts of money in India just to get into a medical school or a private school? So their aim is, as soon as they finish their 4 or 5 years worth of education, they have to go back to society and start making the money to make up for the financial loss their families have suffered. So they begin their profession from a place of greed. They have to get even. They have to make up the loss. So the whole system is so skewed.
Yes.
It's all driven by profit, not by purpose.
I would like to share one experience here that happened in Kodaikanal. In 1998, I was with Bhagwan in Kodaikanal. And we had a debate. We proposed to Bhagwan to give us a topic for debate. And the topic which was finally decided was that for all the ills of society, are the institutions more responsible or the individual more responsible? So we had a great argument, and Swami was very intensely watching all the arguments and, you know, nodding his head and, you know, encouraging us.
Which side were you on, Dr. Anand? Which side were you on?
I was on the side that the individual is more important. He demands from the institutions what they have to provide to him. You know, I go to the market and place a demand. Then some manufacturer, you know, seeing that particular opportunity, you know, provides what I'm wanting. So after the whole argument was done and we fought ferociously, you know, and Swami was very intently looking at us, we came to no conclusion. And Swami, finally, when we did not come to a conclusion, we asked Swami, Swami, what is your final word on the debate? And Swami was very categorical and very clear. He said, institutions are more responsible. Because they create the overall environment where those kinds of desires of an individual are aroused. The kind of films that today the movie makers will make, that is the kind of films that the viewers will see and demand those kinds. Because an individual, we talked about the fundamental discrimination that man should have spiritual orientation, man should have morals, man should have ethics and self-responsibility. Now all these are great ideals that humanity has not yet evolved to. Right, when I even look at Shastri sir is fully aware, look at the hostel. For 10 years I was living in the hostel.
Satya Sai University hostel.
Yes, mm-hmm. Senior Boys Hostel. And I would see that many of the boys, even at MBA level, would come from totally non-devotees families. They have not heard of Swami and not had his darshan. They just came for an MBA degree. But by Bhagwan's grace, they are here. I see, as I was telling in the morning we start from Suprabhatam, then we have our Brahmarpanam, and then we have our breakfast, then we go and play as if we are playing from the team of Bhagwan, then we go to college and first have prayers to Bhagwan. After every class we have a prayer to Bhagwan, then we go and, you know, for a lunch, then we go for games and play as if we are playing from team of Bhagwan. Now the point is that every activity that a boy or a girl of the university goes through is oriented towards Bhagwan. An institution has been structured and made in a way that even if a non-devotee comes, even an individual who comes from a family who's have heard, told bad things about Swami, you know, which they are not aware of, which the media has been telling, even that student within a week's time, 10 days time, is an ardent devotee of Swami. How does it happen? Because the institution has an environment and milieu and, you know, and circumstances whereby he's automatically molded. So I think it is more the responsibility of the institutions not to incite or, you know, arouse the greed of people and focus upon their needs. And people say, if all the institutions, all the organizations focus upon only the needs of people, can they make profits? Yes. Of course they can, because every organization must see as to what is the real need of the nation. They should not go for those industries where they get maximum profit. They can go to those industries where they can serve the society the best, where the real needs of people are. And many organizations, now we have a lot of names, we can talk about Tata's, we can talk about, you know, the Bharat Petroleum, Suzuki, Hindustan Levers, they have made great profits, but they also have taken up very good projects which has catered to the real need of the nation.
So corporate responsibility.
But today what is happening in the world, sister, is very unfortunate. we have a system called quarterly earnings reporting,
mm-hmm.
earnings guidance. Every quarter, the CEO's fate depends upon, is a quarterly result as good as your competitors or not?
And what the is stock the value? Option, stock values fluctuate accordingly. Yeah.
And that is why, though an organization is supposed to, and Swami says, the profit that an organization earns is only the result of the service they provide to society. But that long-term orientation, that noble vision of the corporates is lost in the din of quarterly earnings reporting. And that is why they are forced to become short, myopic in their viewpoint and cause destruction of environment, create scams, fiddle with the accounts and do everything which is not correct, immoral, adharma, and still be able to show higher profits. Because the environment today, and that is why the role of the institutions, the role of the government, role of, you know, the regulators comes into picture to force the organizations to create an environment where long-term view, service-oriented view is given the credit and not short-term profit-earning view.
So what I'm hearing from you is that there is a need for ecocentric leadership.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But we're still lacking it. We have some institutions that are moving in that direction, but overall we are still driven more by profit rather than purpose. And we don't hesitate to flout a few guidelines or regulations because there are regulations in place.
Mm-hmm.
Even in India we have regulations. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be saying even in India. Every country has regulations and they can easily be flouted by means mm-hmm. of rampant corruption, and you know, special interest groups, lobbying, and effluents continue to flow into our rivers. Mining drilling happens uninhibited.
Yes, all these are facts that we read about. The model on which this today's economies are working is, as you rightly said, is flouted. It's incorrect. If today we have to develop India and China into Europe and America, we need resources of at least four Earths put together.
But we have only one planet.
One spaceship, Earth, of which we are all the passengers. If we destroy, in this whole universe, we have nowhere else to go. So we have to understand that the parameters of growth, the parameters of success will not have to change in this current realities. We cannot say GDP is a measure of growth. Today, Bhutan is one example.
Yes.
The whole world,
the happiness.
We talk about, you know, the gross national happiness as an index of growth, and says it has made a firm commitment that 70% of its land will always be under forest cover. It is not dictated by any world organization. It is their own dictates. We want to live in tune with our own culture, tune with nature, tune with the environment. If we all change the parameters by which we judge success, I think the whole world can change into a much better and sustainable place to live in, and it'll be a joy to live in a world. And we will not have such, you know, interviews in Radio Sai. We'll be talking about how happy we all are and what has resulted in that.
Or perhaps sitting in silence and experiencing bliss in the lap of nature.
Yes.
Now, to add one or two more points to this, what he said, what Deepak said, Bhagwan Baba himself was always asking us to do something which is going to help us in leading a comfortable life. After all, the first point is, how long will you go on pushing yourself in the game of making more and more profits? How long? How much? Is there any limit to that? It will be limitless. So you are going on and on and on playing a game where there is no end at all, and ultimately you succumb, getting tired, and you vacate. That's all. That is how it happens. What did you do when you look back after some, when you get old and turn back and look at it? There is nothing you really did anything. That means your existence on this planet has not contributed to any good to the planet or to the society. You have lived a life which is a big waste.
Which is basically based on the mantra of I, me and mine.
That's all.
Which is what plagues modern society.
Mm-hmm. Is it not a big waste? It's a simple common sense point. It doesn't require any explanations from Vedas and Upanishads. So Bhagavan Baba said only one thing. Question yourself what you are doing is right or wrong. question yourself. You have to live a meaningful life. You have to lead a good life. This is the only mantra given by India to the entire world, to all the spiritual knowledge. Are you leading a good life at all? What is a good life? A good life is something where you keep yourself comfortable with the minimum things that are required and lead a happy life. At heart, are you really happy or not? You may be a multimillionaire with lots and lots of problems. What is the use? On the other hand, you are very much satisfied renouncing the entire world and wearing a saffron cloth. India wanted everybody to be satisfied with the minimum that is possible, so that everybody is going to have what is required. The idea is to keep the entire society happy. That is the reason why in India we say first society. Society is first, not the individual. Unfortunately, when we get into this economics and the competitive production...
Yeah, the capitalistic model.
Capitalistic model. There, the individual is sacrificed. Individual is the one who becomes actually centric. Society is sacrificed. So we are not bothered about society at all. It is the individual who is going to think of himself and himself alone. But in India, we never had such thinking at all. It is spiritual, totally spiritual, where every individual will be ready to sacrifice his own personal interests also for the welfare of others. The supreme example for this principle is Bhagavan Baba himself. Bhagavan Baba said, I am just offering myself in the service of the entire society and I want everybody to understand me. You understand me, that's all. That's why always Swami said, whatever I am doing, try to do at least to some extent. Whatever you are thinking should be good, your looks should be good, your talk should be good, your thoughts should be good, you are comfortable, you lead a peaceful and happy life. Unfortunately, even your thoughts will destroy the nature.
So basically, nature is so animate that what I think right now affects nature. If I think a bad thought, or, you know, if I feed my senses with, for example, some garbage from the media, it's having an immediate effect on my environment.
It is so natural. I was watching a picture today. I was watching a picture sent by mail by somebody to me. There is a monkey which comes to a small kid, and it is playing with the kid regularly there in his house. It's a small kid in the cradle. And what is it that makes actually an animal come down to a small kid and every day go on playing with that small kid? Sometimes a lion doesn't attack an individual. It goes there and just looks at him and goes back. What is so special about him? Why it attacks somebody? Why it doesn't attack somebody? All these things are very common. We see all these things happening every day in the entire world, but we don't get the message. A person who is pure, he is one with the nature, and the nature is always with him. In Ramayana it is said, Sri Ramachandra, when he went into exile, and Sita was abducted, Valmiki describes there, the minute Sita was abducted, the whole nature has come to a standstill. For a few seconds, even the wind stopped blowing. The leaves on the trees were not fluttering, they stopped. The deers around grazing, they stopped grazing. Such a calamity has befallen to the entire creation. It was a fantastic example given to us in Ramayana. Valmiki Maharshi was telling us how we are in tune with the nature and how nature is going to respond to you.
Beautiful.
And also when Sri Ramachandra was in search of Sita, monkeys come and help him. Monkey is considered to be the most fickle-minded, but in the most disciplined manner. Monkey's example is given for that reason. Even the most fickle-minded will become most disciplined when it is on the righteous path. A bird like Jatayu, which knew very much the power of Ravana, it attacks Ravana. And Valmiki says, probably Jatayu did it, that was the right way of spending its life. Even it were a question of sacrificing its life, because its life is sanctified in the process.
Because he was doing it for the right cause.
Right, and you die.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful death. In Ramayana they say, what a pious death it is. You pray for a wonderful death, not for a wonderful life. See how we are so good in India, we gave special meaning to all those things which are neglected by most of the society today.
And if I may add, I also read that Baba said, Sita represented Prakriti or nature. So when Ravana abducted her, he was violating nature.
Yeah?
And that is what led to his downfall. Now, if instead of violating Mother Nature, he had embraced Dharma, personified by Lord Rama, his life would have been sanctified.
Totally.
He would have achieved the goal of his life, which is immortality.
Yeah.
But he chose the path of violation of nature, and that was the cause of his downfall.
And here also Swami explained, when Jatayu, its wings were cut down and it has fallen, and it goes on chanting the name of Rama, Ram, 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 and Sri Ramachandra arrives there, and he pulls the bird, holding its head on his thigh, gets some water, puts it into its mouth, and when it dies, a pyre is arranged, and Swami actually cremated the bird. The last rites for the bird were performed by Sri Ramachandra Prabhu himself.
Can you just imagine?
This opportunity was not given to Dasharatha himself. His own father did not get it, a bird got it. When Dasharatha died, Rama was not there.
Yeah.
So I am telling you, unless you read Ramayana and all the spiritual scriptures properly and understand the message that your life is meant to be utilized in the service of society, you don't have a separate existence.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanthi Nilayam. The time right now in Prashanthi Nilayam is 10:36 a.m. and today is the 25th of July, 2013. You just heard part one of this discussion with Professor Gangadhar Shastri and Dr. Deepak Anand of the Sai University on the topic of natural disasters and their spiritual implications. We'll continue this very important conversation next week, same time, same place, right here on Morning Glory. So please don't forget to tune in. Meanwhile, what are your thoughts on these subjects? Do you concur with the experts? If not, why not? We'd love to hear from you. Please send in your emails to listener@radiosai.org. Finally, it is now time for me to offer Morning Glory at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. Before I hand you over to Brother Raghu, may I ask you to please reflect on this affirmation from His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama says, "Remember that sometimes not getting what you want is a wonderful stroke of luck." I repeat his divine words. Remember that sometimes not getting what you want is a wonderful stroke of luck. And if I may add to it what Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, said, Jobs went on to say, "You cannot connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart, even when it leads you off the well-worn path. And that will make all the difference." This quote from Steve Jobs was from his commencement speech delivered at Stanford University in June of 2005. With that in mind, dear listeners, I ask you to please be well, stay inspired, and do whatever it takes to be positive. And please, don't forget to smile. Smile from your heart, till even your heart smiles, and so does your kidney and your liver and every cell of your being. Just be happy, will you? Please? See you next Thursday on Morning Glory right here at 9:40 a.m. Sai Ram.